Greetings, everyone. Good to see you. Thanks for joining us. Delighted to be here, and here we go. So this is Dr. Will Tuttle, and we have Thursday, September 18th, 2025. This is our third Thursday of the month, World Peace Diet Circle meeting that we have every month. And I'm so glad you could join us. So this is for people who are in the World Peace Diet Circle through taking the World Peace Diet Facilitator training or the Mastery Program training or just joining directly into the circle. So this is definitely not open to the general public. And it's just us vegan, spiritual, social advocates and so forth. So a few things just to announce at the beginning here. One thing is that today is kind of a special day for me because I was thinking it would be really a great opportunity for me to just present my presentation that I'm going to be doing on October 4th on the vegan community platform, where I'm going to have a discussion slash debate, actually. I'm not into debating, really, but we don't agree at all. I mean, we don't agree on this main point. So my discussion slash debate with Dr. Silas Rao about climate. So we're going to have a discussion. This is going to be televised or whatever. And so we each get 20 minutes. I'm going to speak for 20 minutes. He's going to speak for 20 minutes. Then we're going to open it up for questions and concerns and comments from the people who are attending. So the whole idea, I like the idea. I mean, the idea is to try to just bring more clarity, you know, like let's talk about it. Let's not just stand over here and say these crazy climate deniers or these crazy climate believers. Let's talk about our perspectives. And we, of course, agree on everything about veganism. It's just this point. So anyway, so what I would like to do after we have our meditation is just do that for 20 minutes. And I have a timer right here. I have a little timer. I'm going to time it. I'm not going to go more than 20 minutes. So, you know, I would love, there's so much to say. So for me to just distill it into 20 minutes will be a challenge. And I'd love to get your feedback about if there's anything that could be better or worse or whatever. And then we also have a special guest today, our good friend Anna Ferguson, who's the a wonderful vegan yoga teacher in Cincinnati. We've worked together over the years. Hi, Anna. She's waving. Everybody. And she's a World Peace Diet facilitator. Went through the training right at the very beginning when we did our first training ever. Back in, I think, I don't know when it was, 2007 or 8 in Michigan on a lake. We had quite a big crowd. I think we had about 30 people. Everybody camped in tents, and we did a World Peace Diet facilitator training. She and Mark Stroud was there. It was a lot of the original people, Judy Carmen and quite a few other people. So that was what kicked things off. And so she's going to talk to us about the new training program she has with vegan world. She has a World Peace Yoga book, and World Peace Yoga is kind of her the movement that she's starting in Cincinnati. She's been working on for quite a few years, and so we'll have that right after my little climate presentation. So the other thing I wanted to mention is that we've been going for 90 minutes. And we're thinking that 75 minutes would be maybe better for everybody. So we'll start on the hour, like here in California, 5 o'clock, and then we'll go till 6:15 or so. I think hopefully that's okay with everybody, but it seems like it's a little – we'll just kind of condense it a little bit. It's still a good amount of time. So that's it. That's the idea today, and we have these three special things happening. And so also, of course, this is your time. So if you have questions and concerns also that we'd like to have us address during our time together, feel free to raise your hand or unmute yourself. All right. So let's go ahead and start with our meditation. And we're still here, California, as you can tell. So we have the piano and we can begin. Thank you very much again for joining us. Here we go. This is just a short meditation time to start our World Peace Diet Circle. Mm-hmm. can go ahead and just connect with our breathing here. As we enter our time of meditation, we connect with the feeling of gratitude within our heart, feeling of appreciation that we have this precious opportunity right here in this moment, in this human life, to ever new embark on the adventure of awakening spiritually and contributing to our world through our creativity, our loving kindness, and doing our best to live what it is to be a vegan, to be a practitioner of ahimsa, of nonviolence in all of our relations with animals and with other human beings, with ecosystems, with ourself, to practice kindness and respect. All expressions of life. So we allow ourselves to relax into this moment together and to nourish and nurture and feed and encourage within ourselves the great bodhicitta, the yearning to awaken spiritually for the benefit of all living beings. To do our best to purify our body, speech, and mind, our actions and thoughts and words, to be a vehicle for healing, to allow the light to come shining through us, and we send our love now especially to all of the animals of this earth. The great beauty that they bring to our lives, the teachings, honoring and respecting their unique intelligence, the part they play in the web of life here, that our life would never be possible without the animals and interconnected ecosystems, especially to the animals who are suffering at human hands in factory farms and slaughterhouses and research laboratories and zoos and rodeos and small backyard farms. Any place in nature, if they're being harassed or hunted, having their habitat destroyed, we send our love and appreciation. We send our apologies We give thanks for all of our brothers and sisters in the human family working to help raise awareness about the plight of animals and of humans, to shine the light of kindness and love and truth, freedom and healing into our world. There are so many wonderful people working hard and doing creative and beautiful projects to raise consciousness. About the truth that we can thrive and celebrate our lives here on this earth in harmony together. That there is nothing stopping us except our misunderstanding of our true nature and of our relationship with each other and with the earth. And so we take now the time to generate in our heart a feeling of loving kindness for all living beings. Visualize that in our heart as a bright white light. And with every exhalation, radiating this loving kindness and benevolence and goodwill in all directions, filling the whole world with the light of love, and sending this love to every living being, to all the animals, to every human, to all the future generations and past generations, to all beings visible and not visible, even those who are difficult for us, just sending it out, soaking every living being in the light of loving kindness and goodwill and benevolence. And sending this feeling of love also to ourselves, this beautiful, unique being that we are. With every inhalation now, we engender in our heart the feeling and the awareness of compassion, compassion is the yearning to help relieve the suffering of others, to act to help relieve the suffering of others. So in many ways, it's the highest form of love. So with every exhalation, we radiate compassion, filling the whole world in all directions and dimensions with the light of compassion, knowing that compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. That is the truth, that one life is filled with compassion. Abiding in our true home of compassion, with every inhalation now, we engender in our heart the feeling of joy, and with every exhalation we allow this feeling of joy to radiate from our heart, overflowing and filling the whole world with the light of joy, with the truth that the very core of every being, there's a wonderful, bubbling spring of joy that needs no reasons in the outer world. It's our true nature, abiding in our true home. Abiding in joy. And now finally we enter into our heart, into the heart of peace. And with every inhalation, engendering this feeling of peace in our heart, of harmony, when we are filled with love and compassion and joy, we are naturally at peace. And so now with every exhalation, we radiate this peace into the entire world, into the universe, abiding in peace. And we see the truth that all living beings essentially are abiding in peace in their true home. We see the whole earth bathed in the light and in the truth of peace, of harmony. Abiding in our true home of love. Abiding in our true home of compassion. Abiding in our true home of joy. And abiding in our true home of peace and harmony. We give thanks, knowing that we are part of the awakening of humanity during these important times on earth, that we came here with a purpose, that we came here with a mission, and that every day we are awakening to the wisdom that guides us to more authentically fulfill this mission for the benefit of all. We give thanks knowing that one life is living through each and every one of us, and that life is love, truth and freedom, peace and joy, abundance, vitality, wisdom and compassion. May we continue to work together to build a more enlightened society, a world that reflects the light that is our source. Give thanks knowing this is so. And so it is. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Yuma. That's what we call our piano here. So, and again, thanks, everyone, for joining us. Some folks came in during our meditation, so welcome to you. And as I mentioned before the meditation, we're going to be going from now on about 75 minutes instead of 90, which I think is probably better for all of us. And we have Anna Ferguson joining us today from Cincinnati with World Peace Yoga, a longtime vegan yoga teacher of World Peace Yoga. And before that, though, I'd like to go ahead, like I said earlier, and just set the timer and give my 20-minute spiel, which I don't have. It's just in my mind. You know, it's not. I don't have it written down or anything. But there's things I want to cover, and it's in regards to the climate change narrative, the idea that that humans are causing this terrible thing, this climate change, and we're all gonna have to stop traveling and so forth. So I'm just gonna go ahead and do this, and then I'll set the timer, and then after 20 minutes I'll stop. And then I'm just going to see if you folks have any either suggestions or comments about it. And so the idea is that for the first few minutes, maybe even half of it, maybe 10 minutes or so, I'm just going to talk. But then I'm going to show some slides, because I think a picture's worth a thousand words in certain cases on some of these things. So here we go. So is everybody happy? Is that okay? It looks like everybody's good with that. Yeah. Okay. So here we go. So I'm going to pretend that this is the big. Some of you didn't catch this. So on October 4th, on the vegan community platform, there's going to be a discussion/debate between myself and Shailesh Rao. I really like Shailesh. You know, I mean, he's an old friend of ours, and he actually says that. Yeah, I think I've said that he went vegan because of a talk I gave. But he really started this climate thing. So, and I was with him for many years, but now I don't see it that way. All right, so here we go. I'm going to start, and I'm just going to jump into my spiel here. Here we go. Thanks. Oh, let Dobby in. Okay. All right, so this is Dr. Will Tuttle, and I'd like to talk about anthropogenic climate change and the devastating effect that this narrative is having on not only on us as human beings, and I think also in our environment. It's based on a lie. So a little background about this, I think. So I've been a vegan advocate and activist for 45 years, since 1980. And so for the most of that time, all the way up until 2006, when Al Gore came out with his Inconvenient Truth, I talked a lot. I wrote about and talked about the many ways that we are devastating ecosystems because of animal agriculture. I could go on and on. It's totally wasteful, and we're cutting down rainforests. We're overfishing the oceans. We're causing soil erosion, species extinction, and aquifer depletion, and so many things. And we could feed everyone on a fraction of the land. But in 2006, Al Gore came out with climate change as a terrible thing for the environment. And so I added that on to the list, like everybody did. So, okay, I'll add in climate change. And then, of course, actually, it was global warming. We added in global warming because he said within 10 years, the polar ice caps will be melted and Miami will be underwater if things continue going the way they're going. So it was global warming was the big thing. So I said, okay, we'll add that on because, you know, there was the United Nations came out with Livestock's Long Shadow and showed that one of the driving forces behind global warming, not just petroleum, but it's animal agriculture. It's methane from cows. So if we would just go vegan, we could really make a positive contribution to this terrible climate change and global warming that's going to destroy everything. So I dutifully went along with that and even wrote articles about it. I wrote the foreword for Shailesh Rao's book, Climate Dharma, and so forth for a number of years. In 2009, then again in 2011, there was something called Climate Gate, if you remember, which is when some of the scientists of the IPCC, which is the Interplanetary Council Climate Change Board of the United Nations, part of the United Nations, and it was set up basically not to just be an impartial scientific board. It was set up with a specific purpose to discuss climate change as a human dilemma. So it's not something that's bipartisan in any way. It has an agenda. I discovered that. So ClimateGate happened when there was this series of emails that were released in England of these people. They were senior scientists with the IPCC. They were shown to be fudging the data. They were talking to each other about how they were changing the data because the data wasn't really supporting the narrative, but they believed in it. We've got to get people to stop driving and to stop eating meat. So we're just going to put it out there. So that started to shake my confidence in the whole thing. So I started talking about it less. And then I read a few books, probably around 20, maybe 16, right around then, I read a few books that completely changed my mind. And I realized that this is just like one of those things where you have a narrative that literally hundreds of billions of dollars are being funneled into this. And no one who's a climate scientist or even a scientist is allowed to question it without serious repercussions. They'll lose their job, and people were losing their jobs over this. So I did a lot of research, and I found that out. But then the thing is, this is a long time ago. This is 19 years ago, right? 2006. This has been going on for 19 years. So most people became vegans after that, or while that was happening, or after that. So from the very beginning, like Silas Rao and all these other people, climate change was part of the thing. For me, it was, I'm an old timer. I've been around for a long time, and climate change came late, and I'm kind of skeptical anyway by nature. So I didn't really take it that seriously, but people did. And young people did. We had Greta Thunberg. We had all these things happening. And so I realized that a lot of people, like from first grade, they got in and the teacher told them climate change, you know, global warming in second grade and third grade and fourth grade and fifth grade and high school and college. It's just totally indoctrinated into us. So what we have now is something you're not allowed to question. It's almost religion. It really has become, I think, in many ways, a faith-based religion based on this idea that there's a consensus of scientists and they all agree. First of all, if the old saying goes, if it's science, it isn't consensus. If it's consensus, it isn't science. Science is about the truth, not like who people voting for something. I mean, they could all be wrong or corrupted. So the whole idea is what is actually true? And so as I started to do more research into this, I began to realize that there are many scientists, hundreds, thousands, thousands and thousands of scientists, climate scientists, even Nobel laureates, who don't agree. But the media is controlled. And so this whole thing, I started questioning. So basically, when I was way back in 1984, I started teaching college in 1985, 1986, 1987, up through 1990 in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I was teaching college courses I was getting my PhD at Berkeley, and I completed that. And I was teaching courses, some of them were in like social justice issues, in philosophy issues, epistemology. I mean, I taught courses in epistemology, which is the branch of philosophy that is focused on truth and how we know what we think is true is actually true. And so through that and through my courses at UC Berkeley on qualitative and quantitative research methodologies, I really dove deeply into science and learned that it's data can be interpreted in countless ways, and we can, if whatever we set out to prove something, we can prove it with science. And money goes in, and it pays for research, and it creates results. And then you have media that's owned by the same people. So I started putting all these things together. I started making these connections. But I was going to say, back in the 80s, I was already questioning science quite a bit because of my research. And something that I think is kind of interesting, because in the 1960s, Rachel Carson wrote this book, Silent Spring, and that kicked off the environmental movement. And the environmental movement was starting to have an impact and was starting to impede on corporations and financial institutions who were polluting the environment, making a lot of money, and people were pushing back and saying, no, no, no. And so they had to find ways to get people not to think about that, right? So this is one of the things I realized is that climate change works really well for that, right? And that's what I see in the vegan movement in general. Like, we have all these reasons for people to go vegan for the environment, and we don't need climate change. We don't need it. I mean, it's so incredibly disruptive to ecosystems on every level. We can add that on, perhaps, but we don't need it. And so, but the thing is, what climate change does is, and it's really pretty much eviscerated the environmental movement, because it's got everybody thinking that the problem is driving too much, that's what they really focused on, even more than animal agriculture. The vegans are talking about animal agriculture, but most of the people are talking about the use of petroleum products and so forth. And so it's become a way to just not be accountable for all of the spewing of toxic chemicals everywhere by chemical corporations and pharmaceutical industries, and pollution basically has gone into the back burner. And so I remember when I was teaching these courses back in the mid 80s and late 1980s, and talking about the Green Revolution. And the Green Revolution was this wonderful thing, right? It was going on. It said, we have the Green Revolution, and we're going to feed the world. And so these big corporations, chemical corporations, out of petroleum you make fertilizers, and then you have petrochemicals. And so the petrochemical and petroleum industries and the pharmaceutical industries, and the bankers in the background, they all went into Africa, and they went into Asia, they went into South America, Central America, and they said, we can help you grow a lot more food, and so you have to buy our seeds, and they were hybridized, and then later they were genetically modified. You have to buy our fertilizers. They won't grow without our fertilizer. You have to buy our pesticides, herbicides, fungicides. And so it was this massive devastation to people and to ecosystems. And of course, the bankers in the background, the farmers couldn't afford this stuff, so they had to take out loans, and then they couldn't pay back the loans, so then the bankers would take over the farms, and then people would have to move into the cities, and you had this massive loss of small farms in so-called third world countries, and everybody moving into the cities and starving. And all of this was making big money for the petroleum and all these industries. And it was all based on something that sounds so good, the Green Revolution. It will feed more people. But it was really changing the foundation of agriculture from soil to oil. And it was impoverishing the local people in many ways and making them more easily controllable, taking away their connection with the earth, which is really their power. And so I'm very skeptical when I hear green, like green energy and the green movement. I mean, who's promoting this? And so then I did some research. I'm looking at my time here. Okay, I've used 11 minutes. So but I just want to say, who's behind this? And so I did more research, and I realized that back in the 70s, nuclear energy was coming on, and they had to have a reason to promote nuclear energy. And so they started talking about climate change, global warming. Petroleum is bad because it could disrupt the climate, but nuclear energy doesn't do that. And then you had the Club of Rome being formed by some very wealthy industrialists. They brought in Maurice Strong, who was an old petroleum guy from Canada, and then David Rockefeller got involved, and then they created the first big environmental gathering in Rio de Janeiro. I think it was back in 1992. And that's when they really started talking about we need to do something about the environment. But who was behind this? It was big oil companies and chemical companies and pharmaceutical industries and bankers. They were behind this whole thing. And it was those same people that then created the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. And all of them do one thing. They concentrate power in the hands of a few people. So this is just a foundational background on this whole thing. But the main point to understand is this. What does climate change actually do? That narrative, global warming. Global warming didn't happen, so they had to change it to climate change. But what is the narrative all about? It's about one thing. It's about saying you should not use so much energy. You should not be allowed to travel. You should not be allowed to move the way you would like to move normally. What do we do if you want to enslave cows and pigs and chickens and turkeys and ducks and geese? What do you do to enslave them as livestock? You take away their freedom to move. So that's what this is being used for. So I want to just show a little bit here of the science, because this is the background, and this has been poured out. And like I say, they estimate about $1.5 trillion just in the United States every year is going to climate research and encouraging people transition over to green energy, so-called. And what's really behind it? So this is a PowerPoint presentation with just a few main slides I'd like to share with you. And this is not going to be something that I'm going to linger on too much. I'm going to kind of just go through it, but just to kind of show the basic thing. So here we go. This is the basic thing. So I'm sharing my screen now, and you can see, I hope, you can see it, right? Okay. So this is the basic idea. This is called CLINTEL. This is the Climate Intelligence Organization based in Europe. They have over 2,000 signatories. These are all highly qualified scientists who say there is no climate emergency. So me, Will Tuttle, saying this, I'm not a climate scientist. Sally Shaw is not a climate scientist. I mean, we are not climate scientists, but these are people who are climate scientists, physicists, and some of them are Nobel laureates, saying there is no climate emergency. And here's one, 31,000 American scientists also. These scientists don't get to be heard. If they make videos and put them on YouTube, they get taken down. I mean, there's massive censorship. Even when I do one, they have a big warning up saying underneath the video, saying about climate change. So just look at this. Understand this. This is really, really helpful to understand. These are the permanent gases of the atmosphere. As you can see, there's nitrogen, oxygen, and argon, and carbon dioxide is 0.04%, along with a few other tiny trace gases. So it's a tiny amount. Now look at this, please. This is what happens with more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. It just is the greatest thing for trees growing. Look at this. It's the greatest thing. When you do experiments and you just increase carbon dioxide growth in a greenhouse or something, carbon dioxide concentration in the air, rice grows, food grows, plants grow. Carbon dioxide is our best friend. This idea of net zero is insanity. That would destroy all life on Earth. So we have to really question, like, who is behind this insidious evil idea that we should reduce, that we have to sequester carbon? Are you kidding me? Carbon is our greatest ally and friend. Look at what's happened. There has been an increase in carbon dioxide gradually. It's been increasing. There's no question about it. But look at what it's done. Over the last 30, 40 years, most of the Earth has gotten greener. It's because of carbon dioxide. Scientists know this. We can grow more food than ever. We can feed people more easily. We have deserts shrinking because of carbon dioxide increasing. So why is carbon dioxide increasing? Look at this. This is incredibly important. This is the carbon cycle. 96% of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is from these natural sources. 4% is from human activity. We really have to understand this, I think, because the main source of carbon dioxide is oceans. As it says here, the oceans act as a major source and sink of carbon dioxide, releasing dissolved carbon dioxide into the atmosphere at the sea surface. So this is the foundational thing. And what's been happening, again, it's not getting any media because it goes against the narrative, is that there's been a real increase in volcanic activity at the ocean floor over the last 10 or 20 years. And so the deep ocean water is getting hot. It's getting heated up by the lava flows under the ocean. And that's causing carbon dioxide to spew into the atmosphere. That's the main cause. And that's what's causing this wonderful increase in carbon dioxide, which is helping everything to grow better. Also, respiration. Like, if you're in a room with a bunch of people, you're increasing the carbon dioxide. And one thing I should mention, too, is that the more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, the more trees grow and plants grow. And what do? They convert carbon dioxide into oxygen. So it increases the oxygen in the air, which is better for us as humans. So the more carbon dioxide, the more oxygen. So it's a totally wonderful thing. We have Respiration causes carbon dioxide. Also decomposition. Anything decomposes, it adds to carbon dioxide. Also volcanoes. We mentioned that kind of earlier as well, but they release a lot of carbon dioxide. Forest fires, of course, and weathering of rocks. That's actually a pretty big factor as well. So this is an important, really important piece. Just really hopefully we can really understand this. So then the next piece that's really critically important is the greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. So what is the gases earlier were permanent gases. Water vapor is a temporary. It increases and decreases depending on where you are. So it's not included in the permanent gases. It's anywhere from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 to 6% of the atmosphere, depending on how humid it is, and the cloud cover and so forth. So look at this, please. This is so interesting. Water vapor is basically 95% of the greenhouse gases. So carbon dioxide is only of, again, 4%. So we contribute 4% of something that is only contributes about 4%, or at the most 5% of so-called global warming. And so for us to be telling everybody that we should stop driving our cars and we can't make any impact, that's the point that we really have to understand. And also to understand this, I think, to see that where we are now, it's kind of hard to see maybe depending on how you have your screen configured. But if you look on the lower right-hand side where we are now, our current carbon dioxide level is only about 400 parts per million, and all life on Earth will die if it gets down to 150. So we're just barely above that. And if you go back into the earlier times, go back 600 million years, you see very often it was at 1,000 or 2,000 or 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8,000 parts per million. For us to be worried when we're only at 400 parts per million, we should be delighted if it goes up, because more carbon dioxide gives more life. So this is a very important just visual of what's really going on. And I'm out of time. Look at that. Okay, well, I delayed a little bit, so I'll just maybe finish up. I think I lost a few minutes. So let me just continue on here a little bit more. Let's see. This shows also the temperatures. So even carbon dioxide is low, and also the temperatures are relatively low right now. So global warming or whatever, it's we're at around, 15 or 14 degrees Celsius. And so there's a lot more. There's many more things I could show you. This is like science right here. This is IPCC. A scientist voting on what the science is going to say. I mean, this is comical. This is just comical. They're going to tell us what science is based on their voting, and these are representatives who are political. It's all completely politicized. 97% of scientists agree with whoever's funding them. The other thing I would like to just mention is that we're coming out of there was a medieval warm period. We're coming out of the Little Ice Age. So it's natural for it to be warming now. It's of course it's warming. It was really very bad for humans. When it's cold, we starve. We have a hard time even surviving. Everything flourished in the medieval warm period. Then we had a difficult time. So it's important for us to see that where we are now, and we're just coming out of this little ice age. So this is some of the, we can see that a lot of the things haven't gotten worse, actually, as we've been told. That one I just showed. Climate-related deaths are just far less than they used to be 100 years ago. The global mean temperature has only gone up 1.6 degrees centigrade. And look at this. You've got Singapore way up here, Oslo way down there. To make a big deal of this, there's something going on, and there's a lot more I could discuss. I'll wrap it up. I only have my 20 minutes. This I've already shown this before. How I'll just mention it though. In 1985, renewables were actually 11% of energy. And this is from the U.S. Department of Energy. This is accurate. And now, 40 years later, after trillions of dollars spent promoting renewables are only 8%. They've actually gone down. So there's more coal, oil, natural gas, liquid natural gas being used than ever. And solar is still only 1%. So it's been really a big scam. And then, of course, the thing that we really have to understand is that the main driver of climate change is the temperature of the sun. And that changes, and the Milankovitch cycles change. There's very complex things. So there's other things going on. So I'll wrap it up here. This is the basic, this is the final thing here. Vegans combining 5-plus carcinogens and 10-plus industrial chemicals to make, quote, food instead of just eating an egg. So what this is indicating is that vegans are being laughed at. We have lost the moral and intellectual and cognitive high ground by promoting highly processed junk food as being vegan food and promoting climate change as being true. And this is devastating to our movement. And it's one of the main reasons our movement is not making progress nowadays. So I want to, again, thank you all for the short on my presentation. And now I have to stop. So what do you think? Was that effective? Or I'm done. 20 minutes is not long enough. But I just wanted to kind of get some of those ideas out there. And then we'll have a discussion after that. So if anyone has any ideas about how I can improve this? I know I feel like I'm rushing, but there's like no way to try, because everybody believes something that's not true, and to try to set the stage and try to help people understand how they've been lied to, it's a lot harder.
Actually, well, this is Christina. I have a couple of thoughts.
Who's this?
This is Christina. I have a couple of perceptions.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, one is, I would like to hear the names of the climate scientists, and not necessarily the Nobel laureate scientists, but the climate scientists' names, just, you know, mentioned, not that you would go into their studies, but just to note them.
Oh, okay, like William Happer and John Christie and...
Well, I don't need them right now, for your talk.
Okay.
And then the other note that I made is... Yeah, carbon dioxide is great. We need it. Everything you said, I listened to your talk before with another person that you spoke with on YouTube. But the problem is, as Joni Mitchell noted a long time ago, they're cutting down the trees and putting up parking lots. So we have to have the plant life in order for the carbon dioxide to be healthy and useful to humans. And so, I don't know, kind of... I would like to see that worked in somehow.
Deforestation is devastating. Yeah,
my perceptions.
Thank you, Christina.
You know, if we don't have enough plant life, the carbon dioxide is poison.
We don't have enough carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide is great, but petroleum spews sulfur dioxide, all kinds of, you know, causing lung cancer and everything else.
It's not going to help us if we only have concrete. So we got to have the plants. Okay, that's it for me.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay, let's see. Andy, you had your hand up right away. Do you have any thoughts?
Hi. Okay, so my thoughts are not going to be on the science thing, and I don't know if you'd have an interest in throwing this in there. But so Silas Rao is not the person who came up with the whole climate change.
Of course, yeah.
But I'm sure he and you understand those things. So possibly to ask him, who thought this up? The billionaire corporations have the power to make all of this happen, to change the cities, turn everything into 15-minute cities because of this whole climate change. And if they truly believe in it, they've got the power to change all of us. Why are they flying their own private jets all over wherever they want?
Right.
But only we, you know, they're the ones that have the power and claim that it's legit. But if they were truly worried, why aren't they changing themselves? This is only for the rest of us poor people, or, you know, so that's what I would get. And then looking at, I mean, what I've experienced, these 15-minute cities that they've been working on since 2020, everybody's having plumbing problems now. I'm in all the public gyms and libraries and all of that. Everyone is having plumbing problems because of the nonstop construction. So, so I would love to see him look at things like, okay, Big Pharma started all the evil and the torture and murder of innocent animals and experiments, claiming it was to help humans.
Right.
And then doctors like you and him and all of these other people had to come out and say, no, you can change your diet. So they had to go against Big Pharma. They had to go against what was being promoted. So that's the thing I would love to see him do, is look at who started this and what is their reasoning behind it, to have that courage to look behind closed doors.
Yeah.
But anyway, I loved it. Everything you do is wonderful, so thank you.
Thanks, Andy. Those are good points. I know they fly around in their private jets and have the biggest footprint you could ever imagine, and they're telling us, we have to reduce our footprint and have it be in a 15-minute city. So that's a critical point, too. So that's well taken. Angel, you had your hand up early on also. If you'd like to unmute, be great. Did you hear me? Or if not, then Tams, if Tams is there. You have your hand
Hi.
Up also. Yes.
So I'm friends with both of you, and I was thinking about two things related to the debate itself. Do you know if you're going first or last?
I don't know. I think what we will probably do is just flip a coin, so it could be either one. However it goes.
Well, why I ask that is because of his mission, because of the climate healers, they always have a call to action. And you're making all of these really great points, but my suggestion would be weaving in at the end, you call to action for us to start researching on our own and really looking at this in depth. Because I feel like he'll do a call to action. And I think it would make your case stronger. Your case is already so strong, but you're not going to have proper time to state all these amazing facts.
Yeah.
So I think in empowering people to research past what you say might hold some weight. So that's my suggestion.
Yeah, thank you, Tams. I like that, a call to action, really to encourage people, because it's not about me trying to convince people. I'm really interested in having people do their own research, not just read what it says, listen to the news on TV, which is a bunch of lies, to really look into it. That's what I did, and that's what we should do as vegans. We should question the official narratives. So that's a great idea, a call to action to don't just believe the media. Right. Perfect. That's
right.
Really important. Thank you. Thanks for that.
Sure.
I just want to add, I love that idea of a call to action, and also that call to action maybe, yes, to investigate on your own, but maybe a call to action to what you feel the best thing is to better the environment and to, like, what is it that the climate change program is encouraging of people, and
yeah,
what is the call of action to, to follow to improve?
Thank you. Thanks, Dana. Right. That's a good point, because we have a lot we can do to improve the environment. As vegans, we're doing that. And what the call to action has been we should go vegan for the climate, right? Go vegan for the climate. But we can go vegan for the environment. And the climate is, we impact maybe local weather, perhaps, with cutting down forests. But the climate is something else. And I think a lot of people do things that are probably not helping animals or the environment. But, like, for example, putting up a lot of windmills, or these, it's just destroying ecosystems, or batteries. It's destroying, destroying, like in Southern California, they're destroying the Joshua Tree National Park, putting up these gigantic solar panel arrays and so forth. This really environmentally devastating, much worse than petroleum for so-called green energy. So I think that's something else that needs to come out at some point as well.
Yeah, I love that, like a call to action for the environment.
For the environment.
And really differentiating,
yeah,
that. I think that makes it really powerful.
Right. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just need more time. But anyway, that's a good one. Okay. Anyone else like to say something? Because
Well, it's me again, Christina.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I know we're almost out of time, but I want to tell you, I love the slideshow. I think it's your slides are really powerful. But yes, I'm curious what you We do know, you know, it's good to point out what is wrong with what this, their solutions are, but I would like to know what your solutions would be. I'm really interested in hearing what you think we all should be doing
right.
for the environment.
Right, right, right.
And so I love that call to action suggestion. That's great.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. Thank you very much, and I have plenty of things. My point is that we shouldn't be worried about the climate. We should be worried about animal agriculture's destruction of ecosystems on a massive scale. And
exactly.
going vegan is the best thing we can do, really, in many ways, for the environment, and questioning the official narratives that are trying to blame us for things that are really that's not what we're causing. We're not causing that problem. So it's about investigating. I think that's really helpful. All right. Well, if there isn't any other comments, additions, or whatever, I really appreciate these. I will jot them down and see if I can integrate some of these into my presentation. I invite you all to join us on Saturday, October 4th. And because after I'm done and Salish is done, I'm not sure who's going first, then it's going to be open up for your questions. And so you yourselves can ask Silas or me, make points or make comments or ask questions or whatever. So it's a public forum, and we're and I think it's gonna, and it'll be videotaped as well. So it's something that may be helpful in the it'll be great if you can be there and maybe contribute a question or something or a comment. That'll be recorded because I think I'll just mention this other thing too, that in the Financial Times a couple of weeks ago, there was an article with a terrible title, but it was pointing at something, and the title was "Why Vegans Lost." And the basic the article was saying that, you know, veganism was growing by leaps and bounds right up until about 2020, and then it started fizzling, and people started abandoning it, or, you know, a lot of the businesses that were based on vegan products started losing money and so forth. And they were saying basically it looks like there's two main reasons that the vegan movement started losing momentum. And one was that the introduction of foods that are hyper-processed as being vegan foods. And so all this whole thing with vegan cheese and vegan meat and vegan eggs and vegan ice cream and all this stuff, it was very enticing, and vegans jumped on the bandwagon and said, yes, yes, you can go vegan. You don't have to give up anything. But then later, a few years later, hyper-processed food started coming under attack. And so people started rampaging against vegans for promoting junk food. And people said, I tried going vegan, but, you know, after a few weeks or a few months, I was eating all this vegan food and I was so sick, and I got to go back to eating real food because vegan food's not real. It's hyper-processed. So that's one reason we've lost the moral high ground about the quality of food, because it should be, like Madeline and I say, organic, whole, plant-based foods. That's the foundation for real health. But the second reason they gave in the article was climate change. They said because two things. One is a lot of people don't really believe in climate change, and so vegans are being seen as promoting something that's not true, and that's never happened before. I mean, vegans have always been basically promoting better environment, less starvation, better health. I mean, these are morally good things. But with climate change, more and more people are waking up to the fact that it's not true. And what they also pointed out is the people who believe in climate change don't care about it that much anymore. You know, it's been like 19 years. We hear climate change on, blah, 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 blah. It goes on and on and on. And people are like, oh, whatever. You know, they just don't care. People, you know, after a while, you can yell and scream about global boiling and all this stuff. But basically, it's not working. It's not a good thing. And I actually had a whole conversation with Silas about the thing we're going to have. And I said, Silas, would you just please agree to say that, look, there's like a seven-alarm fire, right? We got seven reasons to go vegan. We have deforestation, species extinction, habitat loss, soil erosion, water depletion, ocean destruction. We don't have to add climate in there. Just leave it out. Let's recommend just leaving it out. And he refused. He said, no, we have to put it in there. I said, why? And he said, well, my team said that it's in the media a lot. That's where the oxygen is. We should use it. You know, and I said, oh, you know, whatever. But when I thought about it later, it's like that's just pure expediency. That's like saying, well, that's what's working, so we're going to use it. That's terrible, I think. I mean, to base a movement on expediency. We're not talking about expediency. We're talking about right, what's true, what's actually true. Not about, like, this is the lie of the day, so we're going to jump on board. That's the worst possible reason. So, you know, I really we need to talk about this. That's what I mean. So anyway, so let's have Anna. Anna is visiting us from Cincinnati, and I promise, and I'm really delighted that you're with us, Anna. And please tell us a little bit about your latest project. Thank you.
Yeah, well, first of all, great to meditate with everyone. And Will, thanks so much for the meditation. It really is like coming home. I haven't been to a circle in a while, and it's really inspirational and so great to be with you all. And grateful for this community. Been working with Will for a long time and just inspired by the work of the World Peace Diet and especially the spiritual connection. You know, I think that's a big reason why we're all here is for that spiritual component. And in addition to all the others. But anyway, so I, as Will mentioned, I wrote the World Peace Yoga book, which was also inspired, like, as a companion book, really, to Will's book, The World Peace Diet, but more of the yoga angle, and also a spiritual approach. And I've been offering yoga classes, teacher training, vegan-centric workshops related to yoga and spirituality for over 20 years. And my new project is really nothing new, but it's also it's more just something that I'm opening up to the broader community to make accessible to anyone, anywhere. And that is, I started a nonprofit called Our Collective Heart. And through the nonprofit, I'm offering a vegan-centric yoga teacher training, whether you want to be a teacher or you just want to deepen your personal practice, with a very budgetable tuition due on your own time. It's designed for accessibility in terms of time and in terms of price and budget. And it's, you know, I know for me and my yoga journey, my vegan journey and my yoga journey kind of happened simultaneously. And as I got more into veganism and I was taking more classes, it became really important to me to find vegan yoga teachers, and I wanted to study, like, and take classes with people that shared my values, and it kind of blew my mind when I learned more about yoga philosophy, that more people were not practicing in the yoga community of vegan lifestyle. And, you know, the crazy thing is that you could never do a yoga posture, and you could still be practicing yoga if you're practicing a vegan lifestyle, because it's so intertwined with the yoga practice, and we've watered yoga down to just the poses, where it's really not about the poses ultimately. And it is this practice of ahimsa and being mindful and meditation, and the poses are just like a tiny sliver. But anyways, so this training was important for me to put out there, because I know in my yoga journey, I was like, where are the vegans? Where are the vegan yogis? Where are the people I can study with? Where are the people I can train with? And so this is a training that where, you know, you're learning, and the course is with designed for anyone. You don't have to be vegan to take it, but for people that are vegan, you're taking classes and learning from a vegan-centric point of view and from people that share your values. So, yeah, if you have any interest, feel free to reach out. I love chatting and chatting about it, but it was something that was, you know, important to me. And when I was going through training, there really wasn't a whole lot out there. And even today I was Googling, in the last week, just kind of Googling, just trying to find vegan yoga teachers and they're out there and there's the vegan spirituality group and there's this World Peace Diet group, but it's hard, it's not easy to find. Right.
So I have a quick question. Are you offering this as a local or online or both, or how does that this training actually done?
Yeah, so it's online and self-paced, and you can start anytime. And as I update materials, no matter when you sign up for the course, the program is always being updated, and like you have access to it anytime, basically, and you can do it on your own time, and the materials are all there.
And it has asanas, or is it more studying the teachings from Patanjali, or?
It's all of it, actually. Yeah. So it's like if you are interested in teaching meditation, if you're interested in teaching postures, breath work, going into the philosophy, it's a holistic approach. So it's covering all of those aspects. Yeah.
And how long does it take to go through this usually, do you think?
It's a 200-hour course, and you can take it's self-paced, so you can take as long as you want to go through it. But I would say that, if someone worked a full-time job and was doing this, on the side, maybe on the weekends, maybe it would take, 6 months.
Right.
Or more to get through all the content. It's a lot of content. It's a lot of information.
Great. Wow. Good for you.
Yeah.
That's very ambitious undertaking. It looks like Angel has a comment or question. Angel, are you there? You'd like to say something? To ask something of Anna?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Angel's a yogi.
Okay. Yeah. Before I couldn't get the tech part to work. But first of all, Anna, this is Angel from Maui. And I am a kindred spirit. I've been teaching yoga for 52 consecutive years and doing yoga teacher training for over a quarter of a century. And I'm totally on board with what you're saying. Congratulations for offering a vegan-oriented yoga teacher training. And I hope that spreads astronomically. And I'd be happy to collaborate with you in any way we can, because we're definitely on the same page. And so congrats on that. And then also, Will, I want to say about your presentation. First of all, I want to commend you for being a critical thinker. What you're presenting here really goes against the mainstream narrative at this time, and I appreciate about you that you think outside of the dots and that you are giving these charts with, to substantiate your position. So I think all of that is good, and it's great to have a conversation, especially with a fellow vegan, of course, emphasizing your common ground, but clarifying your differences on this point and hopefully, evolving the narrative on this. And I myself have to evolve my own narrative, because in my book I have a chapter on the climate aspect of veganism. So I'm thinking of maybe retracting that in light of what you're sharing and saying, when we know more, we evolve. When we know more, we evolve with the new knowledge. So I think there has to be a willingness to retract perhaps the stance we've taken before and to upgrade it with newer, more informed information if that information is in fact correct. Now, what I want to say about this is that when people do the question and answer, what they're going to say is, and I know everybody's going to say this to you, well, then how do you account for the fact that we have more floods and more hurricanes and more droughts and more fires and more, heat waves in New York and Los Angeles and all the things that they're talking about? So I think if you're asking for feedback, I would be well equipped to respond to that question, because I think a lot of people feel from their personal experience
that, you know, it's heat waves and fires and droughts and storms and hurricanes and floods and all of that. So, you know, if you bring up that there's, you know, weather warfare or that it's regulated by the government or those things, that's going to be very controversial. So I'd like to hear how you would respond to that, Will.
Okay, yeah, briefly, since we're getting kind of a little bit late here on our, we want to try to end it at quarter past now. But I think that's a great, those are great points, and thank you for clarifying everything earlier. And as far as that question, I addressed that in those slides that I kind of zipped over, showing graphs that show that wildfires are actually not more than usual. Floods are not more than usual. Hurricanes are not more than usual. Heat waves back in the 1920s and 30s killed millions of people. Doesn't happen anymore. So, so part of it is that we have a media that has been captured and with a narrative that they have to completely emphasize that every little thing, whatever it is, it's climate change. Oh, it's because of climate change, and you know that's we're used to that. But I also agree that we have weather warfare since they started on this in the 1940s. Lyndon Johnson said in 1962, "He who controls the weather will control the world." We've been spraying chemtrails now for decades, and these are nano aerosolized strontium, barium, aluminum, and other metals that can be used in conjunction with ionospheric heaters that use millions of volts to that can create a heat dome, for example, where there's going to be a drought. And they've been in other countries like Syria or Iran have accused the United States of doing that to them. And so heat domes or hurricanes can be moved and so forth. So there's a lot of technology, I think, in the background that is we are aware of. And these this is called solar radiation management. It's called stratospheric aerosol injection. It's totally accepted. You can get a graduate degree at many universities in geoengineering. So it's happening. No one can deny it. It's not a conspiracy theorist. And I think some of what's happening, some of the extreme weather events are that, and a lot of it is just hype by the media, and a lot of it is scientists being paid to overemphasize these things. So it's a combination of those things. It's all to basically enslave us and take away our ability to travel, to move into, be forced into 15-minute cities where everything is tracked. And 15-minute cities are basically about complete 100% surveillance. It's based on the 19th century model of a panopticon. Panopticon is something they developed where one person could oversee an entire population, say in a prison or an insane asylum. Then it was adopted by animal agriculture, so you can have one or two people that can control thousands or hundreds of thousands of cows and pigs and chickens and other animals in factory farms or feedlots. And it's the exact same model applied to urban areas where you have just a small handful of people can completely control and monitor, you know, thousands or millions of people within that city. So it's turning humanity into livestock, and the narrative for that is the climate change narrative. So it is designed, I believe, to turn us into livestock, and that's the underlying drive. And so what you said is perfect. You said, you know, I wrote that chapter in my book. Maybe I should be willing to take that chapter out or question it. And that's, to me, the essence of integrity and beauty, because none of I would still be eating meat if I wasn't willing to say, well, I made a mistake. All right. I'll do something else, you know, and that's it. I mean, vegans, we should, of everybody, we should be the ones who question official narratives and are willing to change our mind about something, for goodness sake. I mean, when we realize, yeah, I was just going along with an official narrative and I was eating meat, dairy, and eggs, I changed. So if I'm going along with this, yeah, I can change. I mean, we should. If we realize that we made a mistake, we shouldn't hang on and say, well, I like the taste or I think it's expedient or whatever. That's not a reason. So you raise great points, and all of these things, that's the beautiful thing about, I've been traveling with Madeline, you know, all these years, and no one's ever came up with a reason why we have to kill animals for food. I've heard every possible question and objection to veganism, and they don't hold water. And I feel the same way about this anthropogenic climate change. It's a lie. And so there's nothing you can say, really, to support it, but there's a lot of lies that seem to be true. And it's good to discuss them. And that's the main thing, to try to get encourage everyone to do their own research and find out for themselves. So, all right, we're at our time. if everybody's okay with it, I'd like to invite everyone to join together in our closing, if that's okay. I think we're pretty much at our time here. So thank you, all of you, for your participation. I want to send a special greeting to Judy Carmen. She, you know, let us know she couldn't make it here today. She loves to come. But there, Serena Farb is having her big veg fest in Kansas. And so they're at that event tonight with Derek Bros. It's kind of a big deal. So we send them our love. So let's unmute our microphones like we usually do. As it's kind of a ritual here. So we can all say this together. Say the circle of compassion prayer that we like to say together. It begins with the word compassion. So here we go. Thank you so much. Here we go. Compassion,
circle, everywhere.
Great. Okay, again.
Compassion, circle, everywhere.
Great. One more time with feeling. Compassion, circle, everywhere. Wow. Thank you so much, everyone. We love you.
Thank you so much.
Seeing you in October, the first Thursday, we'll be together. And stay in touch. If you have any questions, let us know. And we'll be heading out on the road in November. Over to Florida. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Send me the link to your thing, and I'll put it out to everybody. Yeah. That's
okay. Great.
Yeah.
Will.
Can
I say one last thing, super quick? We have a beautiful cottage on our vegan sanctuary available for rent, and I just want to put out to the vegan community.
On Maui.
Yes. If anyone wants a beautiful cottage on Maui, let me know.
All right. Thanks, Angel. That's really enticing.
Bye.
A vegan. All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone. Much love.
Thank you. Bye.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.